proposed changes to the federal flood insurance system amid this reminder about the dangers of high water. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. You've been hearing about the flooding in the Midwest with swollen rivers tearing through levees in at least a dozen places. States from Kansas and Missouri through North Dakota and Wisconsin could see high water for days. At the same time, the Trump administration is considering changes to federally subsidized flood insurance, policy proposals from the Federal Emergency Management Agency that could affect not these flood victims, but future ones. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer joins me from Washington. Nancy, first of all, a refresher on how this works?
Yeah, well, there aren't many private insurance companies that offer flood insurance, but homeowners in flood-prone areas have to have flood insurance. They can get it through FEMA's National Flood Insurance Program, but it's faced major losses because of record disaster payouts in the past few years, and it's more than $20 billion in debt.
And what changes is FEMA planning to make?
Well, right now, FEMA uses pretty broad flood zones to set insurance rates. And with these changes, homeowners that are more at risk will pay more. So if your home is closer to water or on the coast, you'll pay more. FEMA will also consider coastal surges and hurricane rainfall when setting flood insurance rates. And it'll look at how much it would cost to replace a home. So people in more expensive houses could pay more. And flood insurance premiums for lower value homes that aren't in flood zones could go down. FEMA is hoping that will convince homeowners who aren't required to buy flood insurance to get it anyway.
Nancy Marshall Genzer in Washington. In East Africa, officials in Mozambique are now reporting that about 1,000 people may have died in last Thursday's massive storm, a cyclone that also caused flooding and destruction in Zimbabwe and Malawi. Mozambique is among the poorest of countries, with its economy ranking 130th in the world. Checking financial markets, the 100-share index in London is up 0.3%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are each up 0.3%. Let's turn now to Marketplace's Renata Sago, who has a new report today from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and the University of Wisconsin, drawing a link between health and the cost of housing.
The annual County Health Rankings report finds about 1 in 10 U.S. households spends more than half of their income on housing. Far more renters, particularly those with low income, face this extreme housing cost burden. Marjorie Givens with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation says for these Americans, there's little money for basic needs.
Families then are having to make difficult trade-offs in paying for other essentials like food, or transportation, or necessary medicines.
The report finds there's poorer nutrition and more child poverty where people spend the largest share of their income on housing. Whitney Arrigood-Obricki is with Harvard University's Joint Center for Housing Studies.
A household might find a unit that's worse quality, and then there might be exposures that would risk especially children's health, so things like lead exposure, and then things that might worsen asthma.
The report finds that more affordable housing options and a higher living wage could improve overall health in these areas. I'm Renata Sago for Marketplace.
John in Minneapolis, Minnesota, wrote to say how much he enjoys our coverage of the economy and that Marketplace helps him make strong arguments and combat misinformation about financial matters. To join John in supporting trustworthy, objective journalism, donate online at marketplace.org. Thanks to all the Marketplace investors who make our work possible. Major League Soccer's 24th season is just underway. Investors put in about $150 million to bring new teams to Nashville and Cincinnati. The price could go up for teams coming to Miami and Austin. From the home of last year's championship team, Atlanta United, Georgia Public Broadcasting's Ricky Bevington reports on U.S. professional soccer's growth spurt.
A fan drum line leads 70,000 rowdy soccer fans wearing red and black scarves to Mercedes-Benz Stadium for Atlanta United's first home game against FC Cincinnati. Forbes values Atlanta's two-year-old team at a league-topping $330 million. That's a long way from 2001, when MLS investors were meeting with bankruptcy attorneys. League Executive Vice President Dan Cordemosh.
We literally had prepared statements that Major League Soccer could go out of business.
So what changed? Marketing. MLS refocused its efforts on growing Americans' appetite for non-U.S. soccer, It formed a for-profit marketing arm to do things like broadcast World Cup games in English, market the Mexican national team's U.S. tour, and promote the CONCACAF Gold Cup, a tournament featuring national teams from North and Central America and the Caribbean.
We think of it as kind of one-stop shopping for professional soccer.
Now, a generation of Americans has grown up watching soccer from around the world. As a result, they're more interested in U.S. teams. According to a 2018 Gallup poll, soccer is now a more popular sport to watch among 18 to 54-year-olds than baseball. On average, 22,000 fans show up to a match, on par with the NHL and NBA. And MLS is making sure young people play soccer, too. Teams are required to provide training for boys and girls starting as young as 8, like Alexander Daniel.
I like to score goals.
He attends Atlanta United's Regional Development School.
I play all the positions.
But with team revenues averaging only around $30 million, new investors can't rely on immediate earnings.
The risk is that you're going to lose money in the near term.
David Abrams is an investment banker who teaches sports financing at NYU's Tisch Institute for Global Sport. He says sports investors make money long term, and right now, soccer's a bargain.
I think when any of us look back 5 to 10 years from now, we'll go, wow, it was really cheap.
Especially when Major League Soccer's $90 million domestic TV deal is renegotiated next year. In Atlanta, I'm Ricky Bevington for Marketplace.
And the early social media platform MySpace is apologizing now after erasing from its memory banks a treasure of user creativity over the years. MySpace used to be a favorite of bands posting their work online, but now an estimated 50 million songs and other work from the company's start in 2003 through 2015 is feared deleted forever. How many artists kept other copies of their performances elsewhere is an open question. The company, which still exists, although in much reduced form, blames a server migration error. Our producers are Victoria Craig, Michael Lipkin, Candice Manriquez-Wren, Daniel Shin, and Sasha Woodruff. This is the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.